We are from the planet Mars, and we need your zombie takeout.
Hello, and welcome to episode 425 of Zombie Takeout. The B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
Hello, I'm Scotto.
And you said that, and I immediately, and I didn't think of this when we were talking about it before, fire, Arthur Brown.
Oh.
I am the god of all fire, and I bring you. I wonder if that was an influence. Probably, since Alice Cooper was. Anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
On to, without any further ado, this week's movie, and what I'm talking about, which is from 2012, a band called Death. Welcome to Death Week. We're reviewing the documentary about the band and their album on the hearing. Oh, no. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by the Sex Pistols, who would like you to know, wait, no, they're slinking away with their tails between their legs.
And also brought to you by Kid Rock, the kind of douche who has a super enlarged pic of himself behind his desk.
Oh, and also sponsored by the Runs, who would like, no, they're just face-palming and looking really embarrassed.
Hmm. All right. So we have three kids from Detroit who decide to start a punk band. Yeah, you're thinking, what's the big deal? Well,
The song didn't mention Detroit. Oh, wait, they were before the song.
They were before everything.
Yeah. About a year or two before the Ramones and the Pistols.
Yeah, I think the Ramones were kind of in their early stages at the same time, so they had no idea the other one was going on, probably.
Yeah, nobody outside of their part of England had heard them at that point.
Well, the Ramones, you know, would be...
Oh, Ramones. I thought you meant Pistols. I'm sorry. I flipped it in my head. So, nobody outside
the Pistols.
Of New York...
I don't think the Pistols existed.
No, not yet. The Ramones were early days, but nobody outside of New York had heard them.
I mean, the Pistols were just kind of a prefab thing that just came together after these guys were done, pretty much, I think.
Yeah, so nobody had heard the Ramones at this point outside of New York, maybe some clubs in New York.
Yeah, yeah. So they, they are doing this type of music that really, it's a really aggressive garage rock band, of course, see how it easily this is punk rock music for the most part.
It leans into punk at points.
Yeah, right. There's a huge influence for, like, hard rock bands. They say The Who, but I mean, you gotta say like Sabbath and stuff in there too.
Yeah, there's on the hearing I specifically will mention Sabbath. They say The Who and Alice Cooper. This, to me, because you always hear about MC5, Kick at the Jams being like the origin of punk. Their sound, to me, is the link between Kick at the Jams and the Ramones.
Exactly. Yeah, right. And did I mention these are three black kids, too?
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that's a little detail. So, of course, the problem is you either have people... not into the type of music that they're playing, are into that type of music, but aren't into black people playing that type of music.
As Alice Cooper points out in the documentary, if you were black, you played Motown. If you were white, you played rock. At that point in Detroit.
So these guys decide they're going to call themselves Death. Really a touching reason. I mean, it was,
touching or twisted. It's really kind of a debate there.
Well, you put into context, and I don't think I got that the first time I watched it some years ago. He was really getting over his father's passing.
David Hackney, the guitarist.
Their father's passing. Yeah, their father passed away. They had like some Earth, Wind, and Fire type name before that. And their father passes, and he decides, well, this is the ultimate thing, so we're just going to call the band Death.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's the whole big, I got it, everybody. You know, we're going to go do this. I've got the name. And everyone's like, all right, what is it? Death. No, really, what are we going to call ourselves?
I have four question marks after that note in my notes.
So it of course everyone's just like, what? They but he they persevere, they practice, they piss off their neighbors, of course,
Every good band does.
and they wind up recording. Well, they audition and wind up recording at a pretty prominent studio in the Detroit area. Not, of course, the big Motown studio, but a place prestigious enough that it's still going to this day.
Wow. Okay.
And they record, what, six or seven songs, I think.
They were aiming for a 12-track album. Seven tracks got finished.
Of course, they're being shopped around to get an actual agent and record deal to, sell and promote them. But the one sticking point, everybody wanted them to change the name.
Because yeah, nobody if
So,
it's
of course, this
seven
is before
it was in the
metal.
early mid-70s and nobody wanted a band called Death.
I mean, there was metal, but metal wasn't really metal.
Ironically, and I forgot to check the year, there was another band called Death. I think they formed in the 80s. They were a death
Yeah,
metal band.
right. They're a death metal band.
Also, coincidentally, with a guitarist who passed who has since passed away.
So they insist on keeping the name Death. They get a potential deal with Clive Davis. Clive Davis.
Arista Records, one of the biggest in the business still, if he's still real Clive, I'm not sure. And we should point out the guitarist, David, who named the band, was the one who was insistent on keeping the name.
Right, so and I think they were going to give them 20 grand up front, which they needed desperately, of course, and of course he would have made stars out of them. They would have been an answer to the Ramones. Things would be so different.
They would have gotten the recognition they deserved 35 years earlier.
They
Or
think about
33,
just
34.
how different music would have been, though,
Oh,
like
yeah.
how. You almost want to say the word raceless, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but it
I
would
don't know if
take.
it would have made that much of a difference. I mean, they were only like a decade ahead of Living Color.
Yeah, but I think by the time Living Color came along, metal was a very entrenched, white music,
Oh yeah.
even more so than in the 70s, because
Possibly.
70s it was still young. It was still like anything could happen, and there were no standards back then. People dress like the New York Dolls,
I mean, although if a black punk band would have changed it that much, Bad Brains would have.
True.
These guys were ahead of Bad Brains, but
But Clive Davis wasn't going to sign Bad
oh, that's true.
Brains.
If Bad
Clive
Brains
Davis
didn't
was
have
going to
the
promote these
right, Bad
guys.
Brains but didn't have the reach. Living Color did,
Right.
though.
Right. Davis would have had a lot of power to have, put them over. And I think it would have changed an awful lot because like I said, punk wouldn't have just been, oh, it's these, snotty English guys or, crazy white New
True. They
Yorkers.
would have been first out of the gate.
Yeah.
I don't know, given how long it takes to make and put out an album, I don't know if they would have been first out of the gate, but they would have been right there with the Ramones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They definitely would have been. They probably would have toured together and stuff. They would, I mean, we'd have been seeing something entirely different from what we have right now. But alas,
Alas, David Hackney refused to change the name.
he refuses to change the name, and Davis walks. And eventually, of course, the producer they have walks, and well, he's just like, "Can I get the?" David's like, "Can I just get the masters and the lyrics back?" And of course, everyone's like, "Okay, this is kind of worthless, but sure." They press 500 singles. They do sort of a guerrilla marketing thing that, of course, doesn't really go anywhere because it's only 500 singles, and nobody wants. Well, they do get a little bit of airplay, they said, just not enough to really
It was mostly local.
consistently get a hit. In the great days of payola and the smells like a hit kind of thing, but they take a vacation in Vermont. And why it's important that the location is because that's where they just wind up staying instead of going for 2 weeks. They wind up living there pretty much to this day, a couple of them, two of the three.
Two of the brothers stayed there. Eventually, David moved back and tried to get his brothers to move back and get the band back together and, take another push, but they wouldn't.
And they tried to introduce the Vermont area to the band, but they were mistaken for a gang, which was pretty funny. He's putting up signs and the cops must have been behind him just taking signs down because it's just the word death and a triangle.
Yeah. And then they went Christian rock.
Right. He says, I've got a new idea for a name. And it's, what was it, the fourth movement?
I think so, yeah.
And they didn't even listen to the explanation or anything. They were just so happy that he was finally getting rid of the death. And of course, then they realized, wait a minute, we're a Christian rock band. I never looked this up. Were they the first Christian rock band too?
Late 70s, probably not. Maybe in the forefront, but probably not first.
Well, think about this though. Although, many Christian
depending on how you define rock,
bands? Yeah. That's right.
With their sound, it's a distinct possibility. I mean, the fourth movement stuff was a little mellower than the death stuff, but it was still definitely rock.
Well, I see somebody called Petra from 1972. So,
I have an older brother who's very into that whole thing. He's very religious. And I've heard some Petra, and they're pretty heavy.
Okay. So they are not the first Christian rock band. How funny would that be, though, if the first punk band was also the first Christian rock band? Mm-hmm. But you can't win them all, I guess.
Right.
So they of course, this doesn't work. People are against the Christian message that he has, and that's when he finally leaves to go back to Detroit. Yeah. And they start a reggae band.
Well, David goes back. His brothers stay in Vermont because they have wives and families and lives.
Yeah.
And the brothers, the bassist and drummer, decide to find these two other guys and form a reggae band.
And David still tries to record stuff on his own, but it sounds like they came back to help him out a bit.
Hmm.
And he looked like he was okay. I don't know. I don't want to avoid any. I don't want to be sued or anything. But he looked a lot worse for wear than just drinking. That's all I'm gonna say.
When he left Vermont, he started really falling apart. When he left his brothers,
yeah.
It wasn't explicitly said, but there were. I think he probably had some mental health issues.
Right, and there's probably that too, of course. And of course, if you have those issues, there's not much help really available, so you help yourself.
Yeah, well, it's self-medication, and creatives are notorious for that, let's be honest.
Yeah, definitely. Oh yeah, as creative as this dude was, yeah, there's no questioning that. And they claim in the film that it was just drinking and smoking.
Well, the actual cause of death was lung cancer. I was watching this, and I've seen this movie before, but it was quite a few years ago. Watching that part, I was so happy that I quit smoking almost 8 years ago.
Well, he looked really rough though those last final years. Of course, he passes, and you think that's the end of the story, of course.
Before then, not long before then, at one of his brother's weddings, he gives the masters to one of his brothers and says, hold on to these. The world is going to come looking for them someday.
I won't be around to see it, he said, but this is going to be big sooner or later.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's two parts of the post-band story. One of them is their kids go off to college and are completely unaware. They just think their uncles play some reggae music. And, honestly, the reggae music didn't sound all that much.
It was very typical reggae, yes, even in terms of lyrics.
But they... So they must have been like, oh, whatever, you know, my uncles are doing this or that. And some, one of them seemed like they were a skater, one of the kids. And so, of course, skaters,
And
you know,
punk
listen
kind of
to a
with
lot of punk.
go to ball together. But before then, we had a surprise cameo, not, well, you know, celebrity interview that I had forgotten about, Mr. Jello Biafra,
Of course.
talking about the single that had become quite the commodity among record collectors.
Right.
And then,
So,
yeah, and how it kind of filtered out thanks to Jell-O and a few other people.
right, Jell-O and a few other record collectors. Of course, Jell-O is just interested in you know, as early punk music as possible and just a real fan of the genre. And but his kids, they somehow made it onto a compilation. Nobody knows how, I don't think. Or was it that one collector that was just a fan that put the comp together? I don't know.
Possibly.
Nope.
Those comps kind of came together like zines did back in the day.
Yeah.
It was kind of a very loose, not very professional process. So somebody probably got their hands on the single and just included it on a comp they were putting together and just, spreading by word of mouth.
So could you just imagine like having an older relative that you, I mean, you know, you like it, everything, and you, and then finding out that not only did he play the music you really like, but they were one of the first people to play
Right. Wow. Yeah.
the music, and they were playing it in the house where your grandma lived and stuff.
I love Julian's reaction to all that.
So it's just what the fuck? So of course they lose their minds. They, you know, look for whatever they can, and it leads the between that and the record collectors, it leads to a record company approaching them after 35 years.
A small label, Drag City.
Yeah. But it's still a deal.
Oh, yeah.
And then one of the Ramones, you
No,
know,
the
contact
brother, not one of the Ramones, Joey Ramone's brother.
Joey Ramone's brother. That's right. They were having a festival in honor, and they wanted bands of the era. They I don't think they could play anymore themselves, if I'm not mistaken. I think at that point,
Well, I don't even know who was left at that point.
right? Yeah, there wasn't met. I think
When did Johnny pass?
I can't remember exactly,
Or
but
was he the
I think.
last one? Was it Joey then Johnny? I forget, but
So they pretty much say, hey, can you guys play? And of course, at this point, they hadn't really played, I mean, without Dan, you know.
without their brother, David.
So they'd never played, and this at least, they played reggae.
Yeah, they never played as Death without David, of course, because it was his band, by and large.
And so they wind up touring, and hilarity ensues.
Lovely timing. I'm just looking up when Joey died. 2001. So yeah, this was well after Joey died, and obviously there were no Ramones after Joey.
Yeah.
But the movie opens with this DJ talk, morning zoo type guy,
It
talking
was
about.
Artie Lang.
It was already lying. Okay.
And it was on the Howard Stern show. And I think I listened to this. I think that was the first time I heard about this band, was them talking about it. And at first I thought they were just goofing, you know, like, yeah, sure, the first punk band was a black band. And no, the New York Times had it written, they're going to do a movie about it, and
But a music documentary that starts with a DJ is a bit on the cliche side.
yeah, well, if it's Artie Lang, though.
I didn't realize it was lying. He's not a DJ, he's a comedian, but it was a
Yeah.
radio broadcast and it was a little cliche. And then we get to a very iffy group of celebrity commentators. Kid
They
Rock,
weren't
as you
really in it all
mentioned.
that much. Yeah,
No,
Kid Rock is.
fortunately. Kid Rock, Rollins, who, I mean, Rollins is fine. I'm just a bit, like most Gen Xers who were really into him back in the day, I'm a little tired of him.
I think Rollins is a fine person to
Yeah,
put into
well,
this.
although
Same
Black
with
Flag,
Alice
so.
Cooper and Jell-O, of course.
Great to see Vernon Reid in there.
Yeah, Vernon, of course, too.
Questlove. One
Yeah.
person, the only person I didn't recognize is a black guy with the sunglasses. I don't know who he was. But yeah, it was just Kid Rock was just
Trying
kind
to
of
remember who else.
ruined it for me. And there were a bunch of
Yeah,
people towards
Kid
the end
Rock
who I
is
didn't know.
ridiculous. Kid Rock just because he's from Detroit, yeah. too.
Oh, is that it? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That was the only reason why he was there.
Yeah. And then we get some establishing shots of Detroit. I've never been there, but damn, did it look run down.
Yeah, I
you've been through it.
We did Detroit at around that time, actually, uh-huh. and it was that was how deserted it always was.
Wow, nice to see most of the story told by the band and the people who knew them, and just great to see some footage with their family and old friends, and you know, loved the bit where they're with these two women, the surviving members. Bobby and, what was his name? The other one. Bobby, David, and I can't think of the drummer's name. But
is it Dennis?
Dennis, that's it. The Dennis and Bobby with the two women they grew up with talking about, you know, how they're making a documentary about the band. That was a great scene. I also love how they're talking about, you know, the sibling order, the four brothers, and they get to this bit with Earl, rather, their oldest right. brother, and they make a point of saying not in the band.
Yeah, if you look at the IMDb, he is self not a member of Death.
Although I did get a big kick out of Earl.
Yes,
he was a lot
oh
of fun.
yeah
and they're preacher's kids who called the band Death. I mean, PKs have a reputation, so I guess that makes sense, but that surprised me. Great to see, to quote Hamilton, the room where it happened, their bedroom where they recorded or where they rehearsed, and where David
right. You just picture that. And at first I was like, did they actually record this album there? Because the album, no. of course, is just so raw sounding. Yeah.
Now, they did that at, I would assume, at that studio in Detroit.
Yeah, they did.
Also, very nice to see their parents supported them through it all.
Oh, yeah. Like, in fact, the whole reason the band started was, I guess their mother got into a car accident and mm-hmm. had a pretty big payout.
Yeah.
Enough to buy them all instruments.
Right. Also, love that they just got louder despite their neighbors. Classic rock and roll. The story of their, we were talking about their father's death earlier. That story was just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
There had been, was it a hit and run situation? Or no, it was a work accident.
Weird, yeah.
It was a work accident.
His coworker got, I think it was shocked.
Yeah, it was a lineman.
And he was rushing him to the facilities. Yeah. There was a drunk driver.
The lineman, he was kind of shadowing him, the newbie, plugged something in wrong or put a screwdriver in wrong or something, got shot, yeah. thrown from a pole, and their father was rushing him to the hospital when they were hit by a drunk driver.
Yeah, so it's just a bad on top of bad on top of bad that killed him.
And although, you know, that's when David decides to name the band Death, I love that David wanted, this is a direct quote, David wanted to put a positive spin on death.
Yeah, and you could, I mean, the whole thing about, like, taking pictures of clouds and stuff, it's just...
He was that, sadly say cliche, artiste, you know, who is in love with their own vision and, you know, is just completely off the rails and can't see sense. It just has complete tunnel vision on their idea. To the point where, you know, they wanted to pick, you know, a producer and, you know, representation. He pulls out the phone book, nails it to the wall, and throws a dartboard dart at it to find their producer. I do like that Brian Spears, who produced the album, you know, what was meant to be an album back then, just remembered their audition and their sessions like it was yesterday.
And he's, of course, excited. He's going to do it. And then he goes and talks to the head of the studio. I can't remember his name, unfortunately. And he's just like, have you lost your mind?
And hearing all this talk about how the name Death was so controversial was kind of quaint when you think about, go just in the 80s, with bands, you know? Hell, Bad Religion formed 5 years later.
Well, right. And why were they still having problems getting signed with the name even when the Sex Pistols were around in 77?
Right, right.
So, I mean, that's so tame compared to what came about.
Yeah.
Not many years after that.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, they get the attention of Clive Davis from Arista Records, again, one of the biggest in the business. And he says he loves the music, you just got to change your name.
Now, the obvious thing that I didn't hear was, why didn't they find the people that signed the Ramones and
yeah.
The guy, Supermensch, I think, was the Ramones, wasn't he? I can't remember his name.
But I still have very mixed feelings. I deeply respect David for sticking to his vision. I love those kinds of people who just have that tunnel vision. But when you're passing up Clive Davis over the name, it's not like they wanted to change the music. You know?
Well, right. So what's the sense of your name if no one's going to actually hear your music, you know?
The title of this episode is a Shakespeare reference, A Rose by Any Other Name. A band, a pioneering punk band by any other name would still be a fucking pioneering punk band.
Yeah, the Shep Gordon, the Supermensch, okay. You know, is known as, he actually, you know, Alice Cooper and like so many, mm-hmm. you know, who I think was also from Detroit too, if I'm not mistaken. Was, so, so many people, like, why wouldn't he have picked these guys up?
Right. But I mean, I would understand if he was trying to get them to change their music. And then it's, you know, fuck you, go away.
Well, right, yeah.
But the fucking name is not worth it. Change the name if they insist on it. This is why I have very mixed feelings about David Hackney. He was a visionary, but kind of an idiot as well.
Why can't you talk to him like, all right, so this is why we wanted to call ourselves Death. Mm-hmm. What's an acceptable name for you that would still look
right.
Express this.
But again, with David, I don't think he was that type. It's the arts are littered with people who just were so obsessed and so in love with their own ideas that they were never going to budge on anything. And I very much get the impression that David was one of those people.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
His brothers
backed him and everything,
yeah.
No matter what he did.
Because that's what their parents instilled in them.
But maybe there should have been a, you know, like a slap or two, yeah. You know, like you're gonna pass up $20,000 and not just the $20,000, but I mean, the chance to be promoted in a way where they could do so much.
Yeah, yeah. And then we get this photo of David. It's a still photo that they added smoke to that was rising as he had a cigarette in his hand. At the time, I really liked that picture, but then it got really dark.
Oh, yeah.
Later,
yeah,
the next time we see it. Before then, though, I liked reggae, so I liked that they went from punk to reggae. And, you know, we hear a clip of one of their performances and, you know, Bobby, the vocalist and bassist, was going on about ganja.
Yeah, of course.
I also love that Dennis taught all of his nephews to play drums. All of Bobby's kids learned to play drums. There was a line like, what are you doing turning all of my kids into drummers?
I mean, it's something a kid can get into much more easily than the bass or the guitar. Yeah.
It's just hit the thing.
Yeah.
And you're sitting in front of it instead of picking it up. I mean, a bass would be too big for a kid, unless you got a scaled down one. Another thing that was chilling, when Heidi, David's, you know, widow, was talking about him, talking about his own death, and then hearing a recording of him talking about going to heaven. You know, when we know that he passed, he has since passed.
Yeah.
That was just chilling. And then he gives the masters to Bobby at his wedding. He was a visionary, like to a point where it was scary. He had so much faith in his music that he knew the world was going to come looking for it.
And, you know, I think he had enough clues to see where things were going. He's, you know, the punk bands that came after them,
I'm kind of a geek about, you know, the history of popular music. And for a while now, I've been thinking that there were two real revolutions. Most of it was evolutionary. The two real revolutions, as I see it, or saw it until this movie, were punk and hip-hop. They both kind of came out of nowhere. But I don't know if really that's the case with punk anymore. Was it more of an evolutionary thing?
It was definitely more of an evolutionary thing, because the garage rock bands, the Sonics...
They name checked the Kingsmen, who were definitely more punk.
Yeah.
I mean, Louie Louie is a punk song. The Kingsmen version.
Oh, definitely.
That is straight up punk. Not familiar with the Sonics. The Who definitely have been listed as one of the predecessors of punk.
I believe the Sonics' most famous song is that Have Love Will Travel.
Don't know it.
It's got this awesome guitar riff.
I'll have to check it out after we're done recording.
Yeah.
I'm realizing, punk was more of an evolutionary thing, which is interesting. Because it was essentially a reaction to arena rock.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people like saying that. I think it was more of just a reaction to the way things were going, commercialism of everything.
I mean, nothing exists in a vacuum.
Yeah.
But, you have, Prague was still around. You have Zeppelin. You have the big arena bands. You have these not only complicated music, but massive production. And, they just brought it back to the origins of rock and roll, where, you didn't even really need to know how to play, almost.
Right, right.
Three chords and the truth, to quote, some book. I think punk was really about bringing it back to the origin of rock and roll. And that's kind of what's refreshing about these guys. It really was a classic rock and roll story.
And if you stick around for the hearing episode, you'll hear about the classic rock that is really in this more than just the punk.
Right. Moving on, we get the 8 years later when we see Joe. I loved him talking about how he got the single and started to filter it out. Loved Bobby's reaction to hearing that the single, I think it was Bobby, that the single was selling for $800.
that it was some collector that... Yeah. Put it down for 800, and he's like, why would he have done that? I would have just given it to him if he wanted it that badly.
Right. Why would you spend that kind of money on my music? Love Julian's story about hearing death in college and then calling his father. That scene alone is worth the price of admission in this movie.
Right. You think that that story shouldn't be as interesting as it is, but it's fascinating that you just grew up with the people and they turned out to be something completely different or did something completely different with their youth that you wouldn't have expected.
And Julian is just fun to watch. He's so charismatic. I also loved his reaction to the New York Times story where you see his band Ref Francis. Named after David's side solo project, Ref Francis. His reaction to their big picture in the New York Times story. Because once the world finds out about them, then, invites them to play. It was before the band got back together. The Sons, Bobby's Sons, put a band together and played some of their music at some shows.
Right. Right, doing a tribute.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they did music of their own. They didn't really get into that.
Well, they're still together. I've heard some of their own stuff after I saw this movie the first time. It's pretty good. They called themselves Ref Francis after David's solo project. It was just great to see the next generation, carrying the torch.
And then it was cool to see the tour at the end. I mean, I've seen shows at the Empty Bottle here in Chicago. So it was like, I would have loved to have seen that there.
Yeah. I had no idea that Elijah Wood ran a record company.
Me neither. I mean, I guess that's what you get after the trip to Mordor.
Yeah. Also, seeing their mother's funeral put a really nice pin on the film because it was so personal to begin with.
Yeah.
This was really a fly on the wall personal story. So, ending it with their mother's funeral, more or less ending it with their mother's funeral.
And the way the film is made, it's very same way, punk in the same way that they were punk.
Right.
It wasn't about the attitude or that. It was about just how you'd get it done.
Right.
When he shows things around, gives like a tour around the room they recorded, there's people having conversations on the outside. Mm-hmm. When they're touring the record studio that they were at, they had like I don't know who was with them, but while they're being interviewed, he's just standing there and yawning. I mean, it's just there's zero polish to this film.
No,
there were zero retakes. Everything was just done as is.
Yeah, and no point to sequels and remakes because it's a documentary.
Oh yeah, I guess I just got to check out their later stuff.
Yeah. So on to Brains. Speaking of, no polish, no retakes. It's just get to the point. And I fucking love that about this movie. I'm going 5.
Yeah, I'm going 5 too. It's just, if you like music, this just is so exciting to like see people or just any art in general, just going all out for it. And if you've listened to this show long enough, it's pretty much our same attitude too.
I mean, I don't even edit anymore unless there's some kind of train wreck. I just slap the music in if a voicemail if we got it on there and let it go.
Right.
So what have we learned?
We learned that 20 grand was a lot of money in the 70s.
Still, I wonder
what that would be worth now.
Well, I don't want to know.
If someone came to us with like a six-figure deal and said, but you got to lose the name Zombie Takeout, what would we say?
Fuck the name. I only thought of it because it sounded like a B-movie. I have no attachment to it.
You're not going to be like, no, man, this is my vision of a restaurant for zombies.
No. If they tried to get us to polish it and do retakes and, or just do like interviewing celebrities and just being nice to their movies. Then, fuck that. If it's the name, bye-bye name. Bye-bye. What do you want us to call it?
Yeah, sure. What do you want to call it instead?
As long as we're doing the same show, we'll call it whatever you want.
As long as we have the rights to the new name. Because, so many people get motherfucked with that.
And I learned that there's a Manny's in Detroit. They bought their instruments at a music store called Manny's. There is, or was, I think it has since closed down, a very famous music store on 48th Street in New York called Manny's. I don't think they're connected. I was just shocked to find out that there was a Manny's in Detroit.
I miss Detroit. That was a fun city, honestly. Get back there someday.
48th Street in New York, just to clarify, they didn't say that specifically. It's a whole row of music stores, very famous among musicians. Anyway. That's it for A Band Called Death. Until next time, when we'll be reviewing The Incredible Shrinking Woman as a tribute to the late, great Charles Grodin. Always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.